One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode contains distressing themes, profanity, and descriptions of sexual violence. This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener caution is advised. It was shortly after 3 p.m. on July 31st, 2001. Unusually, temperatures had reached 30 degrees in Glasgow the previous week, but it was cooler that Tuesday afternoon. Catherine Campbell and Stephen Glass were driving through Bella Houston Drive in Moss Park, a residential road lined with semi-detached houses, when out of nowhere they heard a loud crack. Their eyes scanned the road, trying to find the source of the disturbance. A man in his mid-60s wearing a light-coloured casual jacket and dark trousers caught the couple's attention. Concerningly, he was clenching a piece of wood in his hand. Stephen slammed the brakes and got out of the vehicle. He realized another man was lying horizontally on the pavement, being struck about the head repeatedly with the length of wood. Blood was pooling on the path surrounding the injured man. Stephen instinctively yelled out, telling the assailant to stop. The attacker wrapped the wood in a plastic bag and turned to walk away. As he left the scene, he hollered back to the man he had just attacked, "You'll not fucking do that again." Welcome to Season 9, Episode 8 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Emergency services were called to 221 Bella Houston Drive to assist 72-year-old James Mitchell, who was found unresponsive on the path outside his home. He was carefully loaded into the ambulance, which sped to Southern General Hospital while paramedics tried their best to treat him on the journey. Officers from Police Scotland took statements from neighbours and witnesses as they tried to locate the man seen attacking James. Some of the residents on Bella Houston Drive explained that it was common knowledge that James had been involved in an ongoing feud with his next-door neighbour for years, and it seemed things had finally come to a head. At this point, considering the seriousness of the attack, the police were clear that they would be treating the incident as an attempted murder. A spokesperson told the press, "We are trying to piece together exactly what has happened. Inquiries are ongoing, but it appears that this man was on his own at the time. At this time, we are not sure if this was an unprovoked attack or otherwise." James Mitchell had lived on Bella Houston Drive with his wife Anne, their son and three daughters since March 1986. The retired factory worker had a heart bypass operation while living in a flat in Glasgow, and the family thought the move to a quieter area would help his recovery. Inevitably, their children got older and flew the nest. Their son Stephen enlisted in the army, and their daughters Karen, Leslie and Aileen started their own families and careers. James's involvement with local organisations, including the Crime Prevention Panel, kept him busy. He and Anne enjoyed spending their time walking in nearby Bella Houston Park with their dog, Max. However, situations outside their control caused a great deal of distress, such as one instance 2 days before Christmas in 1994. The couple lay in bed but were kept awake by loud music coming through the walls from a neighbouring property. James Drummond, the occupant of the house, had moved to Bella Houston Drive a year before the Mitchells. He had a reputation as someone with a chaotic life and a fierce temper. His behaviour in the past had gone far beyond antisocial. In the early 80s, he had attacked his neighbours with a tyre lever, but so far his behaviour while living on Bella Houston Drive hadn't turned physical. Frustrated and exhausted by being unable to sleep, James banged on the wall in an attempt to get Drummond to finally turn down the music. Instead of understanding that he was being a nuisance to those who live next door and just turning the volume down, Drummond started shouting abuse and hammering back on the wall before storming out of his front door and standing in the Mitchells' driveway. Through their window, they could see that Drummond was carrying an iron bar. The couple, who were pensioners, were too afraid to open the door. Incensed by his neighbour's request to turn the music down, Drummond began beating their front door with the iron bar. James Mitchell was left with no other choice than to involve the police, but by the time the officers arrived, Drummond had already made 5 large holes in the front door and smashed the windows. Luckily, he was apprehended before any more damage was done. As he was being escorted to the patrol car, Drummond shouted out to his neighbour that he was a dead man. James Drummond warned James Mitchell that when he got out, he would kill him. In the meantime, the local council replaced the Mitchell's door with a more secure model and fixed the broken windows. Their Christmas was spent fearing what would happen when Drummond was released. 3 days after his arrest, Drummond was back on Bella Houston Drive, intimidating his neighbours and walking behind James as he tried to get home. Drummond could be heard shouting to James that after the court case, he was fucking dead meat. The police were called, but the abuse continued into the new year. Desperate for a solution, James contacted Glasgow City Council to see if they would intervene. In March 1995, the council issued Drummond a written warning and told him that if the incidents continued, they would instigate legal proceedings against him to recover the possession of his home. Drummond did not stop. He confronted James's youngest daughter Karen on a bus while she was pregnant, and the Mitchells noticed other things they suspected were caused by their neighbour. Occasionally, when Anne took clean clothes off the washing line, she saw holes in the garments, almost as if they had been cut. Scratches in the paintwork on their car could not be explained, and on a number of occasions they found dog excrement smeared all over their front door. James was concerned not only for his own safety but for his family, including his 5 grandchildren. He began keeping a log of any interactions he had with Drummond in a diary. It didn't take long for all 60 pages to be filled up with the threats and abuse he had endured. At least once a month for the next 6 years, James Drummond threatened to kill James Mitchell, and despite repeated pleas to the council, no permanent action was taken to remove Drummond. James and his family went as far as contacting local councillors and members of Scottish Parliament, who wrote to the council on their behalf, but the situation wasn't resolved. In 1999, the Victim Support Charity, which supports victims of crime and people who experience traumatic incidents, contacted the council to tell them that residents were too afraid to speak out against Drummond. Finally, in late August, Drummond was arrested for threatening to kill James Mitchell in front of other residents. After this, neighbours wrote to the council in support of the Mitchells and urged them to take action before something terrible happened. Diary entries James made at the time included, "Drummond told me I was going to get done in, and Drummond said, 'You're a dead man.'" The abuse escalated, and by the beginning of 2001, James had CCTV cameras installed at his home. The cameras did not deter the family's harasser. Numerous incidents were captured, which led to James Drummond being charged with breaching the peace, but each time he was released back to the house next door to his victims. By July 2001, the police had been called out to the street over 40 times. Later that month, the council invited James Drummond to a meeting to discuss the incidents and give him a notice of proceedings for recovery of possession. He was informed that he was being evicted at around 2 p.m. on July 31st. An hour later, Drummond beat James Mitchell so badly that he fractured his skull in two places. James and his family had not been told about the meeting. Anne Mitchell was having lunch with a family member in the city when she got a call to say that her husband was badly hurt and was being taken to the hospital. She later recalled that when she got home, Anne saw her husband's blood on the pavement. "They put some powdery stuff over it, but you could still see and smell it. My daughter Karen's partner Raymond and my son Stephen had to shovel the caked blood into a bag." 64-year-old James Drummond was arrested and charged with attempted murder. When he was cautioned, he told the police he could not remember the attack, but added, "I hate that man because he has given me 5 years of hell." Drummond, who was visually impaired, was granted bail while he awaited trial. When locals heard of the attack, they expressed their sympathy for James Mitchell, who was considered by all to be a kind and generous neighbour. One said, "He is a very nice man. He is so helpful to everybody and has time to talk to people. I can't believe anybody would want to hurt him." Another added, "Everybody likes him and his family. All the kids on their way to school always stop to say hello or give him a wave." James Mitchell spent 9 days in the ICU of Southern General Hospital, and the doctors were hopeful that he would make a full recovery. But on August 10th, 2001, James had a heart attack and passed away. The doctors believed that his injuries and the stress he was under contributed to the cardiac arrest. After James Mitchell died, James Drummond was charged with murder. On June 25th, 2002, James Drummond pleaded not guilty to murder, but entered a plea of guilty to culpable homicide. The plea was accepted by the Crown, and James Drummond was again released on bail until sentencing. at Glasgow Crown Court the following month. Drummond's barrister, Peter Gray QC, claimed that the abuse had come from both sides. James Mitchell's family were told to be quiet when they gasped and shook their heads in disbelief. Presiding Judge Lord McEwen did not doubt the history of tension between the neighbours, but said it did not justify the accused's behaviour. He told Drummond that he would have received a longer punishment if he had been a younger man. The defendant was sentenced to 8 years in prison. A further 30 days were added for the charges of breaching the peace Drummond had racked up in the year before James Mitchell's death. A few months later, it was announced that James Drummond was appealing against the length of his sentence. The victim's family only found out about the development when a meeting they had scheduled with Justice Minister Jim Wallace to discuss failures in the case was cancelled. James's youngest daughter Karen said, "My father cannot appeal against what that monster did to him. Drummond took a loving husband and father away from us. I can't believe he has the cheek to launch an appeal. At the trial, he pretended he was sick and needed sticks to walk, but he used to scream and shout abuse at my dad as well as us. Mum has never got over what happened and is still on antidepressants. We are trying to get on with our lives and we're planning a special service to remember Dad's anniversary when we heard this news. My MP Ian Davidson phoned to ask if I'd been told, but no one at the Crown Office had seen fit to tell us. We have been kept in the dark. There is no justice in Scotland, and no consideration for the families of victims. If Drummond succeeds, he could be out in less than 4 years. He is a very angry man, and I fear for my family." In November 2002, the Mitchell family were told by the Evening Times that the appeal was successful and the sentence was reduced to 5 years. Voicing her frustration that Drummond could be released early on license, Karen remarked, "We're going through a life sentence since Drummond killed my dad, but now he's going to get out in 2 years? He must be laughing at us. It's only by accident that we found out Drummond would be walking the streets again in 2 years. My family should have been informed. The whole family is absolutely sickened by the news. We are bitter, disgusted, and vengeful. I feel physically sick. Why should we be forced to suffer a life sentence when the man who killed the most important person in our lives is getting away with a couple of years in jail? We are determined to find out what on earth the grounds for appeal are. The justice system has let us down time and time again." In response to questions about why the Mitchells were not kept informed about Drummond's appeal, Solicitor General Ailish Angelini said, "The system has failed, and I can do nothing but apologise most sincerely to the family if we have added to their grief in what is a deeply distressing situation. We will take action to deal with it, and we are taking action as we speak." Angelini invited Anne Mitchell and her daughters Karen, Leslie and Aileen to Edinburgh to meet with her and the Justice Minister. The family were told that there was a forum being planned for families to discuss failures they believe led to deaths. Karen said, "It will be a fitting tribute to my dad if all this can lead to some changes for the better." Anne Mitchell and her daughter subsequently filed a civil case of negligence against Glasgow City Council, alleging that they owed a duty of care to James to keep him informed of actions being taken against Drummond to ensure his safety. Their solicitor Cameron Fife warned that the legal first could lead to other similar cases against the council. He said, "If this case is successful, It could change how the council approaches its policy in this area because it could open the floodgates to claims against it. This is a very emotive case, and the council will not want the negative publicity surrounding it. However, if it reached an out-of-court settlement, it could have also led to a rash of similar claims. Karen added, "This has never been about money, but making the council pay for its own failings. It's about making a change to the way councils deal with complaints about antisocial neighbours and a difference to the lives of those victimised by them. If we're successful, councils should start watching their backs for other claims." Karen's mother, Anne, felt that the legal proceedings gave her a sense of purpose and helped her keep living. James Mitchell's widow said, "James had a fighting spirit and wanted the best for the whole community. He sat on the community council and was active in Neighbourhood Watch. He had a sense of justice, and it's because I can focus on that that I can go on." Adding stress upon grief, Anne had been threatened with eviction while waiting for benefits to be processed after James's death. Mercifully, the Mitchells' children rallied around their mother to ensure she could keep her home. Anne spoke of feeling that Drummond was still waiting outside to attack her. "I like the house, and my other neighbours are fine. I want to stay there. I know the area, and if I moved, I wouldn't know what I was moving into. I sat for 2.5 years and seldom went out unless Aileen came and took me shopping or Karen took me out for a meal over to her house. In a way, I'm quite content, although I miss James so much. It's not easy getting used to being on your own, but I take Max for a walk every morning, and I quite enjoy it, even when it's cold weather. It's nice to meet people walking their dogs who knew James. He loved it there." James Mitchell's death had far-reaching consequences on the lives of his loved ones. Karen's daughter Nicole was only 5 years old when her grandfather died, and she suffered such extreme anxiety over choking that she refused to eat and had to be hospitalized. Karen claimed it also caused the breakdown of her brother Stephen's marriage. In an interview with the Glasgow Times in May 2004, Anne spoke about the possibility that Drummond could be considered for parole early the following year. She said, "Every day that Drummond gets kept in is a relief for me. I was satisfied when he got 8 years, but I feel as though he has just this minute gone in. The thought of him being out again, being around again, is horrible. I wouldn't put it past him to come back." Anne's daughter Karen intended to protest the possible release of her father's killer. "My dad used to go to crime prevention meetings at the Pollock Centre, so I'd like to get a petition printed up and have it in there, and I will go round the streets with it. I did it when Drummond was let out on bail. He took to the streets that weekend and got more than 2,000 signatures. We'll get this one together before the parole hearing. We have to have the objections in by August." Once again, the family had not been kept informed about Drummond's case. They learned that he had been out for unsupervised weekend release since March of that year. A local had contacted the Evening Times and told them, "I've lived in the Moss Park area for more than 20 years and would never forget a face like James Drummond. I couldn't believe it when I spotted him coming out of the St. Vincent Street post office. It's hardly been 2 years since he was locked up." When the Evening Times informed James's family, Karen said it felt as if someone had ripped out her heart. "When I told my mum the news, she just burst out crying. She's too frightened to go home tonight and will be staying with me for a while. We've been on medication through all this, and I've already been in contact with the doctor again. My mum has just begun going back into town by herself, and she could easily have walked into Drummond. Can you imagine how that would have felt? We only found out for definite when the head of the prison's notification scheme confirmed what the Evening Times had told us. I just don't think we can take any more. All the promises made to us count for nothing. We are the ones who have stuck our necks out for some kind of change in the criminal justice system. And this is our thanks. It feels as if the prison service, the justice people, and the Crown Office are all laughing at us. At the time, there was no provision to inform victims' families about day or weekend release of offenders. Justice Minister Cathy Jamieson said she would push for a scheme to be implemented to avoid the same thing happening in future. A spokesperson for the Scottish Prison Service also provided a response. There is a careful risk assessment before any individual is granted home leave or allowed back into the community. This is seen as an integral part of gearing an individual for re-entry into the community. We fully understand the sensitivities attached to these issues for victims and their families. We can assure the public careful assessments are carried out. Later that month, a new database was announced that could identify members of the public who were at risk of violent crime. Officers at the scene of a crime would be made aware of prior call-outs to the same address, allowing the offender's history to be introduced in court. It would also allow prosecutors to stack cases involving the same offender and victim. Solicitor General Ailish Angelini told the Evening Times, "It addresses the type of problem the Mitchell family had to suffer where there was a persistent course of conduct by someone, yet it was dealt with disparately by the system. Reports were coming in and it wasn't coming together in such a way people could focus on that behaviour and say this is building up into a real problem and address it and catch it at early stages. Prosecutors are now aware of the cumulative effect of behaviour which can make life miserable and unbearable." Karen Mitchell welcomed the news when she said, "This would have made a big difference to us. My dad's death is helping to reshape the criminal justice system. He won't come back, but we won't see other people treated like us. The database would have been perfect. My mum and dad would not have had to go through the whole story every time a new police officer appeared. Drummond would have been evicted long ago, and it wouldn't have ended in murder. The only comfort we as a family have is to say my dad did not die for nothing." On the third anniversary of James Mitchell's death, a plaque and bench in his name was unveiled at Bellahouston Park, where he and Anne used to walk their dog every day. A petition opposing Drummond's release and letters from James's grandchildren were submitted earlier that month. Karen spoke at the memorial. "It's been almost exactly 3 years since my dad was killed, and it's really only now some of the wounds show any signs of healing. But that in no way detracts from our fears that Drummond could again target our family. It wasn't just my dad he had it in for. He terrorised us for 8 years. We've got the backing of our community and MSP, so hopefully the parole board will take this into account. We want him barred from Moss Park and approaching our family, and subject to regular mental health and risk assessments. We'd also want to know the outcome of the parole meeting as soon as possible, but don't expect to until December." The following month, the introduction of a new provision to inform families when an offender was granted day release was credited to the campaigning of James Mitchell's family, but their pride was soon replaced with anguish when they learned that the parole board would be approving Drummond's release in January 2005. At the time, Karen said, "It was always inevitable that this day would come, but but it's a kick in the teeth that it's come so soon. Drummond will be walking the streets the week after Hogmanay. This will be hanging over us all during the festive period, and I honestly don't know what to do. We have been trying to get on with our lives, but this is a huge setback. I can't even tell my daughter just now. When you look at how long Drummond's done in jail, it's incredible. He gets just over 2 years for killing a man and destroying the lives of his family. James Drummond was released from Norrenside Open Prison in Angus in January 2005. He remained on license until mid-2007 and was prohibited from going near James Mitchell's family or Bella Houston Drive. In July 2005, a judge at the Court of Session in Edinburgh dismissed the Mitchells' £150,000 negligence case against Glasgow City Council. In his ruling, Lord Bracadale warned that had the case been successful, the number of further claims against local authorities in areas where there is a relatively high crime rate would be considerable. This could lead to significant diversion of resources, he said. It could also lead to difficulties involving a variety of agencies. James Mitchell's daughter Karen spoke with the press. She insisted that it was never about monetary compensation for the family and voiced her disappointment that they had been let down again. The judge's decision seems to be about the financial implications to councils, not a man's life or the council's duty of care. The Mitchell family announced that they would appeal the ruling. Two years later, in July 2007, James Drummond was back in court. Anne and Karen Mitchell alleged that he had confronted them on the street 5 months earlier and asked, "Which one of you will be next?" Karen said she was frightened and in a state of panic. But in Drummond's testimony, he argued that Karen had been the aggressor and she had punched him. Subsequently, Drummond was found not guilty of breaching the peace. In his ruling, Sheriff Lindsay Wood told the court, "It is clear that there is a tragic background and history that could account for certain behaviours. I thought the Mitchells gave evidence in a straightforward manner. Then I heard from the accused, and I am left in doubt where the truth lies. I am uncomfortable and cannot identify the culprits who were lying." The following year, the Mitchells won their appeal to bring a civil case against Glasgow City Council. It would be the first time in Scottish history that the council was sued for the actions of one tenant against another. A precedent that could be set by the case concerned other housing authorities who petitioned to be allowed to speak at the hearing. They feared that it would open the floodgates for other claims. Graham Craik, a solicitor who represented 8 housing associations that were not involved in the case, said, "We have no axe to grind against the Mitchells. What happened to them was very sad. But there is a fundamental principle of jurisprudence here. Do we really want to make an organisation responsible for another person's criminal acts?" Continuing to argue that her family's case wasn't about the money but moral and professional obligations, Karen Mitchell replied, "People keep mentioning floodgates, but each case should be on its own merits. In my dad's case, this was 7 years of complaints, dozens of which involved the arrest of Drummond, not acted upon. But I accept that housing associations and councils can't be responsible for everything a tenant does." The case was heard in December 2008. But 2 months later, Glasgow City Council was cleared of any wrongdoing. The court found that the council could not have foreseen the attack on James Mitchell, so they had no duty of care to inform him that Drummond was being evicted. Karen believed that despite losing, the case was not a failure as a lot of good came from it. Landlords will now be concerned about letting situations go so far for fear of getting into a complicated and costly legal battle. There's a victory in there somewhere, and I'm proud we've gone this far. My dad started this attempt to get landlords to face up to their responsibilities, and we've brought it to its conclusion.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com, BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Unfortunately, after all they had been through, the Mitchells were back in the public eye a year later, but for very different reasons. One member of the family, 42-year-old Stephen Mitchell, was arrested at his mother's home in Glasgow following a 10-month investigation. It was claimed that he had sexually assaulted women throughout his career as a police officer. At his trial in October 2010, it was alleged Mitchell had assaulted over a dozen women and teenagers aged between 17 and 48 during an 8-year period while he was working at Pilgrim Street Station in Newcastle. Prosecutor Paul Sloan QC told the court, as well as being known to the police, each of the complainants was a vulnerable female, whether because of drug abuse, health problems, domestic circumstances, or a combination of those factors. The defendant took advantage of their vulnerabilities. In June 1999, Mitchell arrested a 24-year-old woman on suspicion of receiving stolen goods. He allegedly told her he would get her bail if she did him a favour. He forced her to perform a sex act and continued to show up where she lived for months afterwards. Other women reported similar incidents and said that Mitchell had threatened to make things worse for them if they did not comply. Paul Sloan said, "The prosecution case is the defendant deliberately targeted vulnerable females. We say he employed specific tactics to take advantage of and to exploit their vulnerability, whether by flattering them or by helping them or by pretending to help them or by blackmailing them. The prosecution is that it was the gratification of his own sexual desires which motivated this defendant, he being confident throughout that not one of the women would report him because who would believe the word of a thief and a drug addict against that of a serving police officer? It was argued the assaults took place in interview rooms, cells, Mitchell's patrol car, and even the homes of the women he targeted. Most of the victims testified that they had not reported the assaults because they were afraid they would not be believed. The woman who was in remission for cancer when she was arrested for shoplifting was afraid to report the sexual assault until Mitchell began turning up at her home. She said, "I thought no one would believe me. I was a shoplifter and he was a police officer. I would never have been here if he had not kept coming back to the house. If he had not done that, it would have been a secret till the day I died. I would not have told a soul." Another victim had been handcuffed by Mitchell at her home in 2003, and she was told she was being arrested for benefit fraud. When she became upset, Mitchell told her he would give her something to cry about and raped her. A woman who had been trying to piece her life together after being released from prison testified. "He said if I didn't start doing things he wanted, he would make sure I wouldn't get my children back, and he had the means of planting heroin in my home." Stephen Mitchell took the stand in his own defense and argued the case was a conspiracy against him. He told the court, "They are lying. It's fairly obvious there's been a whole lot of rumors going around spread by one of the women who is telling people stories for a certain reason. It's a small drugs and criminal scene in Newcastle, and people have been talking about this on a number of occasions. There have been Chinese whispers." Stephen Mitchell was ultimately found guilty of 2 counts of rape, 3 indecent assaults, and 6 counts of misconduct in public office. At the sentencing hearing in January 2011, the judge addressed Mitchell and described his actions. "You use methods which were abusive or corrupt or which involved a gross distortion of proper police practice to try to manipulate them and to get them to do your bidding in order to provide sexual pleasure for yourself. For a significant part of the period you were active as a police officer, one of your major preoccupations was to use the opportunities which being a police officer provided corruptly to advance your sexual gratification. You have been convicted of repeated and, I am satisfied, predatory, persistent and determined offending against 2 rape victims. I am satisfied that if you were at large, even though you would not hold a position of authority such as being a police officer, you would remain a danger to women for an indefinite time. You are a manipulative and driven person. The only reasonable conclusion to draw is that you pose a risk of sexual assault to vulnerable women, and it is impossible to estimate how long you will continue to pose such a risk." After imposing 2 concurrent life sentences, Mr. Justice Wilkie warned the defendant, "You will only be released if at all, if the parole board has concluded it is safe and in the public interest for you to be released on public license. That may not be for many years, if forever." After the trial, it was revealed that Stephen Mitchell had been charged with the sexual assault of a young army recruit when he was serving with the armed forces in 1991. The case was ultimately dismissed, but his ex-wife Julie said the warning signs had been there all along. He is a psychopath, and when I look back, I think he's always been like that. He was just very good at disguising it. In 2007, Stephen Mitchell had been suspended from duty over what was thought to be a sexual encounter he had with a drunk woman he was driving home from the police station. After appealing his dismissal, he was allowed back to work. Julie said that his behaviour worsened after her ex-husband's father died in 2001. He became controlling and abusive. He had two mobile phones, and he would take calls in the evening. He'd tell me it was from an informant, and he had to go out and see them. But I now suspect this was all just an excuse to go and meet the women he was abusing. Mitchell's siblings and mother stood firmly by him even after he was convicted of raping and assaulting women. Describing her brother as a lovely man, Karen said, "They're painting him to be a bad man, but trust me, he's the most loving, caring man in the world." Karen argued that her brother was the victim of a police cover-up, and she had seen proof that he wasn't in Newcastle when the crimes took place. She added, "The whole family is 100% behind him. We know he is innocent. It's not just his word I'm going on. I've seen things. Documents that show he couldn't have been in Newcastle when they said he was. Even if it takes years to prove his innocence, we will do anything to help him." So where are we now? The women Stephen Mitchell abused and attacked were told they could not apply for compensation because many of them had criminal convictions. After a review in 2012, 10 of the victims received compensation from the police at a cost of over £300,000 between the payouts and the victims' legal fees. Despite being sentenced to two life terms, Stephen Mitchell was granted parole and released from prison in 2018. He moved back to his mother's home in Glasgow. One of the victims said, "I've never heard of anyone getting parole first time around for such a serious offence, given the fact that he was so manipulative and never admitted anything. He chose victims who were vulnerable and wouldn't be believed if they dared to speak up. The fact that he pleaded not guilty meant his victims had to give evidence and relive what happened. I still remember one of his poor victims had learning difficulties and wasn't even able to give evidence in court. When they sentenced him, they should have taken into account all of his victims and not just the ones he was convicted of attacking. I honestly think he has used everything he learned in the army and the police to help him get parole by just telling them what he knew they would want to hear. I'm worried that he's out of prison. He's managed to get away with what he was doing despite being in the police, so he's very cunning. When you're someone capable of that kind of offending over that period of time and who's that dangerous, I'd have liked him to have served a lot longer. I would have felt safer if he had never been released." Recalling a childhood marred by her father's controlling behaviour, Stephen Mitchell's 22-year-old daughter Abby also believed that her father had managed to manipulate members of the parole board into releasing him. She added, "I think he is a psychopath who feels no empathy but has learned how to fake emotions to get people to do what he wants them to. He is calculating, manipulative and dangerous. He is now and I believe he always will be. He has managed to convince the parole board that somehow he is a changed man, but I just don't believe that can be the case. Through the family, I have been told he spent time in prison in groups doing needlework, embroidering cushions and making greeting cards. He would record voice messages telling me he loved me and that I would always be his little girl. But I saw through that. It wasn't the voice of a loving father. It doesn't matter how many cushions he has sown. He has not changed. Thank you for listening, and special thanks to our patrons for their support. For more information on this episode, please see the show notes or visit our website, theywalkamonguspodcast.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.